Welcome to Louisa May Alcott Is My Passion, the podcast.
I call you friend. Though you lived long before me, it's your words, your wisdom shine through.
For all of you who are endlessly fascinated with the life and works of Louisa May Alcott, this is your podcast. Here we gather as scholars, teachers, students, and fans to learn from each other, talk with each other, and celebrate our passion for the Alcotts. We'll read from Louisa's works, share the latest news, discuss her work and life with fascinating guests, and sometimes even hear from the old girl herself. And now, on with the show. Welcome, and I have with me two very industrious ladies. Their names are Jenny Bergstrom and Miko Osada, and they are the authors of The Little Women Cookbook, novel takes on classic recipes from Meg, Jo, Beth, Amy, and friends. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
So you guys describe yourselves as librarians by day, spending your free time making food and beverages from your favorite stories. What was it about Little Women that motivated you to create this cookbook?
So the cookbook wasn't our idea. Our publisher Ulysses Press, they recruited us. They wanted to make a cookbook to coincide with the release of the movie. And then they looked around, I think, on the internet and to see if anyone had made recipes from Little Women before. And then they found our blog and they sent us a Facebook message and said, "Hey, do you want to write a cookbook?"
Yeah, and we kind of just thought this was some weird scam or something. Miko just had texted me and said, "Oh, look, we finally got our book deal, haha." But we, you know, replied to their message and started talking to them, and it is, you know, it was a legit thing. And so they asked us to write the book, and we were super excited about it. Being librarians, we always thought it would be super cool to write a book, but we never actually had that as a plan in life, I guess.
Life has a way of giving you new plans.
Wow, that is true.
That is very exciting. How long did it take you to work on this book?
We had about 3 months from when the offer was until we were due to turn in our first draft, which was on April Fool's Day earlier this year. We both have full-time jobs, so we basically spent our every other waking moment thinking about Little Women, writing about it, researching it, cooking, doing all of that. It was kind of a crazy time, but we managed to get through it and only turned in our draft 1 week late, so not too bad.
3 months, holy cow. I mean, your book is very deep in many ways, and I can't imagine. I figured you must have had a year to work on it, so that's kudos. I mean, that's pretty amazing. In the introduction, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I'm actually pretty obsessive. So as soon as the offer came in, I spent the next weekend reading through it and writing down every single instance of food and drink to see if we could do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out we could.
Yep. Yeah. It has more food in it than you could ever imagine. People just don't usually think about
true.
It. Yeah.
Yeah.
So in the introduction, you present a brief history of 19th century food in New England. Could you please share that with us?
Let me check my notes.
What, it doesn't just roll off the top of your head?
Well, there's kind of a lot to it, surprisingly.
Yeah, there is.
So I think the first thing that we realized is that cooking was a huge pain back then.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a scene where Marmee tells Meg, "You need to get more exercise and you need to do more housekeeping." And I kind of scoffed at it as a kid. I was like, "Okay, yeah, you need more exercise by doing more housework," which sounds kind of, you know, like a sexist thing to say or something. But when I did my research, I realized it's really hard work because you can't just go to the supermarket in a car, load up your trunk full of stuff, and then drive home and then just bake stuff. You have to, like, chop wood. You have to go and shop and stop at every single place for each ingredient. You have to luck at home because you're probably walking. You have mm-hmm. to pound the sugar because it comes in a loaf. So it's like a lot of backbreaking work mm-hmm. there.
Carry the water, carry the wood.
Yes. The other thing I learned was that food is super trendy. So we might talk about this a little more when we talk about the how to adapt the cookbooks or the recipes to today. But like, for example, it's hard to find cookies because they didn't eat cookies as much as puddings. There's tons of puddings. And we expect to use vanilla a lot in our cooking and baking, but they use nutmeg and savory and sweet dishes. So, you know, even though the dishes look similar, there's some slight differences according to what's trendy and available. And the other thing that I was surprised by is that, well, I think a lot of us think that food back then for Victorians was really boring and monotonous, like a bunch of boiled meat is what I pictured. But it's actually really pretty global because a lot of ingredients were already imported from all over the world. So from, you know, ketchup is actually originated in China and was made with all kinds of things. It wasn't just tomato ketchup, it was walnut and butternut, and they basically pickled anything that moved or didn't move for a long time.
Ew.
Yes, lots of pickling, and yeah, they just had a lot of condiments. You know, their basic food was very simple, but they weren't just eating it plain. You know, they were making all of these condiments that seem a little odd to us nowadays. You know, lemon ketchup, how is that even a thing? But yeah, their food was really interesting. I think one of the lessons that I took away from it is that people like food that tastes good. And, you know, whatever resources they have to do that, they will do it. And so, you know, having cooked a lot of these recipes, we were often really surprised at how good they were, even though they seemed really simple.
Yeah. Oh, that's really interesting. What were cookbooks like in the 19th century? How do they differ from today? And what cookbooks did you refer to for the recipes?
Well, I counted in our bibliography, I think we list 22 cookbooks that we used that were all from the 19th century. The one we use the most is called The Young Housekeeper's Friend by Mrs. Cornelius. And that's actually mentioned in Little Women more than once. And so that's why we, you know, use that as our main source. But we actually found that that cookbook had the best recipes of any of the ones that we consulted. Often their recipes work really well on the first try, very delicious. But, you know, talking about how are they different than cookbooks today, basically, they assumed people that had a lot more experience than we do necessarily. You know, a lot of people just grew up cooking along with their mothers, grandmothers, servants, etc. And the conditions that they had were a lot more varied. Like right now, we have an oven with a thermometer, and it's going to be at 350 degrees more or less. Back then, they had to build a fire, and you know, you couldn't rely on the oven to stay the same temperature the whole time. The ingredients varied a lot depending on who grew them or where they bought them. The indoor temperature, you know, they don't have air conditioning and heating as much as we do, so that can vary a lot between the seasons. So the instructions in a cookbook at that time were a lot less specific because you had to vary things just depending on all of the conditions that you're in. So reading a recipe from then for now, you're kind of, it's like it doesn't really tell you what to do exactly. It kind of tells you, gives you a roadmap. And same thing with measurements back then. We didn't have like measuring cups that were all the same size. Like everybody in the country has the same measuring cup. They just mostly used things that they had around the house. So you'd say butter the size of a walnut or butter the size of an egg or use a wine glass or a coffee cup or a teaspoon. And those things were uniform enough that those worked as measurements. But, you know, it's, so when you read these kinds of recipes, it sounds really kind of old-fashioned and hokey, but there is actually a lot of science underlying things. Also, I mean, let's not go into the whole food safety thing, but people knew about food safety even back then, and they had a lot of ways of, you know, making sure that their food was healthy and edible. You kind of hear about people like, oh yeah, they put a lot of spices on their meat because it was always spoiled. Like, that's not actually the case. They knew about spoiled meat and like you shouldn't eat it.
That's very interesting. You wrote that the menus that the characters choose and enjoy gives us hints and insights about their personalities and priorities and help us to better understand them. So in examining the table of contents, I see that you've arranged the recipes according to the different characters. Can you give an example of a recipe for each main character and what that recipe reveals about that character?
So the first step I took was making a list of all the food, and we debated about how we should organize it. it became very clear that we should organize about character for us because that's how we connect to the story is through the characters. Mm-hmm. So, for example, Meg, we think that the representative recipe is the currant jelly. I think it's one of the most memorable culinary scenes in the book where she failed to make the jelly, and it's very emotional. Mm-hmm. And I think it just shows who she is because she just has this idea of this like beautiful pantry in her mind. It says a lot about her as a domestic housewife, and she really wants to be a really good housekeeper. Mm-hmm. And she's ambitious, but also doesn't have the most common sense sometimes when she goes forward and does things. Mm-hmm. For Joe, we thought the gingerbread nuts that we chose was very, you know, representative of her because she's really pragmatic. It appears in a scene where she's feeling homesick because she's going to New York and she's on the train. She just said goodbye to her dad, and she distracts herself by entertaining the kids next to her by giving them gingerbread nuts every time they start to cry. Mm-hmm. Okay. So she's not fancy. She really likes children. Mm-hmm. So we thought that showed her character a lot.
Mm-hmm. For Beth, the history of a squash, which is actually the only recipe in the book that's an actual recipe. And this is where she's a little too shy to write an actual article for their newspaper that they have, remember? And so she puts in this little story about a man who goes and buys, or is it a man? I don't know. I think Tracy Tupman, I guess, is a man in
the yes, book, that's right.
It's actually
yeah.
her. So. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyways, this person goes and buys a squash and brings it home and, you know, combines it with various ingredients and serves it to the family for dinner. So it's, you know, that's a very Beth thing to do. It's very cozy. It's very warm and sweet and, you know, nothing flashy or fancy. Also turns out to be delicious. And then finally, Amy, of course, is the pickled limes. for Amy, you know, food is all about social status and, you know, trying to get people to think that she's cool and fancy, and she wants to be trendy and indulgent. And so, you know, the pickled limes, which are, you know, kind of a weird food. We actually made them, and they're good in their way.
That's a very diplomatic answer.
Yes. You know, it's the sort of thing that, you know, kind of like kids today with, like, hot Cheetos or when I was a kid, we'd have Atomic Fireballs. It's not a comfortable food to eat, but it's about your social status and about, you know, showing off and being cool and having the trendy thing. So that's totally Amy.
Wow, that's very interesting. Yeah, I particularly like what you were saying about Joe and the gingerbread. And from what I understand, mm-hmm. that was her specialty, was gingerbread. And gingerbread is a very, it actually says quite a bit about her interior life, you might think, because it's a very warm, inviting, comforting kind of food, you know. And Joe could mm-hmm. be that way when she allow herself to be that way. So it's kind of revealing. That's cool.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah, and like how she's trying to keep the kids from crying, which is also keeping herself from crying.
Yes, very practical. That's exactly yeah. right. So the specific role of food in the story, do you see any negative connotations to food in Little Women, particularly considering Louisa May Alcott's background? I mean, they suffered a lot of food deprivation, you might say, because of her father's vegetarianism and asceticism and her mother's philanthropy. And frankly, when you were mentioning about Mrs. Cornelius's cookbook, it was only 1868, and they weren't in their prosperous period yet, the Alcott family. So I was thinking, how did she even come across that cookbook? And had she ever had any of those recipes, considering how restricted the diet was? Well, mm-hmm. what were your thoughts about all that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, in terms of Mrs. Cornelius, there were earlier editions of that book. It was actually originally written to help young housewives who were just starting out and didn't have a lot of those cooking skills like I was talking about before.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a popular book and went through several editions. So I think the one that we ended up using, the 1868, but there were some earlier ones.
Mm-hmm.
But to your point about, you know, the negative connotations to food because of deprivation, I thought that was a really interesting question I had not particularly considered before.
Mm-hmm.
And thinking about it, I'm actually kind of surprised how little emotion is put into the taste of the food or the actual, like, having food or not having it
mm-hmm.
In that way. I think in this book, food is so much more about, Like, it has a more social symbolism about how the girls, as they have these food successes and failures, it's really about their successes and failures at being women in the ideas of the time.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of serves as a symbol of family closeness, like the same thing with the gingerbread nuts, reminding her of her family and making her feel at home, that kind of thing. If you compare to someone like Roald Dahl, I don't know if you've read many of his books.
Oh, yes.
His food writing, it's just, like, so sensual and exaggerated, you know. All of these, like, they live inside of a peach, you know. And
yes, like
the descriptions of what that peach juice tastes like. Or in Matilda, where he has to eat this giant cake all by himself. And, you know, and Roald Dahl, it lived through, you know, that sort of post-war period of a lot of rationing in England. And clearly, I think that really comes out in his food writing. So it's interesting to me how not sensual the food descriptions are in Little Women, which was not really something I'd considered before. So
yeah, that's actually, I hadn't thought about that aspect of it either. I mean, I'm keenly aware of the, you know, the deprivation they went through with food, mm-hmm. but I hadn't thought about it that way. I'll have to go back now and look at all that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I actually didn't know, so I grew up reading Little Women countless times, but I did not, because it was always described as autobiographical, the novel, mm-hmm. I had no idea that Louisa May Alcott had gone through that much poverty
mm-hmm.
for a really long time until I just watched a documentary when I was an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And like Jenny said, I don't think you can see it very much in the book, and I wonder if that was her kind of rebellion. Like, they eat a lot of meat.
Yeah, you're right.
So sometimes I'm like, maybe that was her way of saying, you know, I did not enjoy being a vegetarian. My characters are going to eat a lot of meat.
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah. There is a lot of meat and you know, the lobster and the fish and all of that stuff was mm-hmm. forbidden. So, yeah, I think it is interesting how she was able to kind of take her experience and almost turn it inside out in the way that she wrote about it in the book. So speaking of your cookbook, I saw recently on Louisa May Alcott's Orchard House website that some of your recipes have been incorporated into a lesson plan for teachers, and I wondered if you could tell us something about that.
Well, we had a woman contact us who works for the production company who is making that Greta Gerwig movie that's coming out this year, and often for movies that have kid appeal, they will put together a curriculum that teachers can use alongside it.
Mm-hmm.
So she had contacted us about using some of our recipes for that, and we talked to her a little bit just about the cookbook process and gave her some of the recipes to use. So I'm hoping she asked us for some that are easy enough for kids to make. And that could be made in, say, a classroom or a library. And since we're librarians, we kind of know what sort of resources you might have. So we gave her some of the simpler ones. But I think it's a cool tie-in.
It is. It's a wonderful tie-in. I saw that. And I'm like, aha, perfect. It's a way to kind of experience the story in a sensual way. I mean, that was really nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's a really big part of our vision for writing this book, is to allow yourself to time travel in a sensual way and get that actual experience of what it would be like to eat that food.
Yeah, that's definitely true. So you had to adapt these 19th century recipes to today's standards. If you weren't able to find an ingredient, how did you know what to replace it with?
It's a good question. A lot of the ingredients, really, we still use. You know, there's not anything that's, like, too weird. But there are a few things that are just not made anymore, like saleratus, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Now we use baking powder. They're slightly different in a chemical way, but it's pretty easy to substitute for them. Or things like sugar. They seem to have a lot more different types of sugar than we did. They came from different parts of, say, the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
And they would often specify in a recipe, like, make sure and have, I don't know, Barbados sugar, because it's better than whatever other one. So, you know, a lot of that, we are missing some of those nuances, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And chocolate also was really different. The way that they made hot chocolate was almost more like making coffee.
Oh.
Yeah. So we kind of had to figure ways around those. But there were a lot of options for recipes, and we had more than we could fit in the book. So in most cases, we just used ones where we could get the right ingredients.
Yeah, that makes sense. when you had your book launch, which recipes from the book did you, because I noticed that you had food available at your book launch, which recipes did you use?
We wanted to pick the ones that you could eat pretty easily with your fingers, mm-hmm. because it was going to be an event where people were standing up and milling around. Mm-hmm. So we chose the potted ham, which is from the Camp Lawrence picnic. And mm-hmm. the Camp Lawrence picnic, they don't talk about what they eat. So we just looked up what kind of picnic food they might have had. Mm-hmm. So potted ham was one of them, and we thought it was pretty delicious.
Yeah.
So we had that with crackers.
Mm. Plus, it's something people don't eat so much anymore, at least not in the U.S., so it would be kind of an exciting thing for people to try.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have a particular favorite recipe in the book?
Oh, yeah, we do, actually.
Our favorite one is the asparagus that we put it in. It's in the Joe's standing joke of a dinner meal. Mm-hmm. This is one that we read the recipe in Mrs. Cornelius's book, and we just thought, there is no way this is going to be anything but a pile of mush. Sounds terrible. But we made it, and it was wonderful, and just such a different way for asparagus. Basically, you boil the asparagus to death, and then you make toast, and you dip the toast in the water that you boiled the asparagus in. Then you lay it on a plate and butter it, and then put the very soft asparagus on the toast and eat it with a knife and fork.
Wow, that's bizarre.
Right?
Yeah, we read it, and Jenny was like, we're not going to do this. And I said, we are going to do this.
Oh, my gosh, that is so different.
Yeah, it's great.
That's terrific. Oh, boy. I think, finally, I think one of the values of this cookbook is as a reference source, particularly if you're writing historical fiction. And there's some great details in there that you could use in a historical fiction book. It's a great way to introduce details about food into a story. Did this cross your mind when you were preparing the book that it could be used as a reference book?
It actually didn't. What we wanted to do was write, we wrote the book the only way we knew how to write it, really, because we had so little time. And mm-hmm. we wrote the book that we would want as Little Women super fans. Mm. So we're a librarian, so I think anything that we were going to write was going to be very in-depth.
Mm-hmm.
There was no way around that. And also, when we do our food projects, all we want is authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
And what we want is for it to be that food from the book. Like, we don't want to have food that's inspired by the book. We want to have the exact thing that they would have eaten mm-hmm. as close as possible, because we think that that's like the closest way to being inside a book. And we spent a lot of time as kids wishing we were living in our favorite stories, you know, and we felt as people who like food, that's kind of the closest way we can do that.
Yeah, although you've definitely succeeded. I mean, this is a wonderful collection of recipes, and there's just a lot of interesting other tidbits in this book that I know people will really enjoy. If you could let me know what your website is, your website address, and where people can pick up this book, and is it available in bookstores such as Barnes & Noble or in independent bookstores?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's available, as they say, wherever books are sold. You can get it online or in regular bookstores. And our blog is called 36eggs.com, mm-hmm. the number 6 eggs. And you can find us there. We also have an Instagram and a Facebook, which are intermittently updated. Mm-hmm. We're not like big social media people, but we will answer you if you email us. You can also email us at eggtally, eggtally @gmail.com if you have questions.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's great.
Yeah.
I'll be putting all of this into the show notes so that people will be able to see how they can contact you.
Okay. There's links on our website as well.
Great. That's awesome. Well, thank you so much. This was really interesting, and I wish you a lot of success with this book, and I think people are really going to enjoy it.
Well, thank you. This has been really fun, and we were kind of excited to talk to you about all of this, since you're kind of a well-known person in the Little Women world.
No.
So we're very flattered to have you invite us on.
Oh, well, no problem. So the book, again, is The Little Women Cookbook, Novel Takes on Classic Recipes from Meg, Joe, Beth, Amy, and Friends by Jenny Bergstrom and Miko Osada. Thank you very much, ladies.
Thank you, then.
My thanks to Jenny and Miko for a wonderful account of their new cookbook, The Little Women Cookbook, Novel Takes on Classic Recipes from Meg, Joe, Beth, Amy, and Friends. You can find it in Barnes & Noble stores and in independent bookstores. You can also order it online on Amazon. I will include the links in the blog post, and I will also include their website, 36eggs.com, and social media information so you can follow up on them. Coming up in early December will be a podcast with Lorraine Tosiello about her new historical novel, Only Gossip Prospers, a novel of Louisa May Alcott in New York. I've read an advance copy of this book, and it's quite the ride. Sure to be a fun interview. Stay tuned. Visit louisamayalcottismypassion.com for all the latest. Hit the subscribe link if you haven't already, and you won't miss a thing. Until next time, happy reading. Oh, and I think we can say, too, happy eating.